let yourself be weird and embrace that. People often think of weird as a bad thing. And I have just seen it as this portal into your authenticity so often. The more you can just like shed the shoulds of what you should look like, should do, should say, and just be like, wait, no, that's my weird thing I do. And that's who I am. Like, and own it, the more you'll step into your power and voice.
Are you a burnt out overachiever buried in responsibilities? Is your inner critic going nonstop? Do you miss laughing with your friends, just laughing from the gut? Do you feel like life's passing you by? If you've been wishing for some kind of shift, you're in the right place. Welcome to 52 Weeks of Hope, the show where we take you off the hamster wheel by ditching your to-do list for the to-don't list. This is where you get to learn how to make that lonely ache vanish, learn self-compassion techniques, and to give yourself grace. I'm Lauren Abrams, and I get to help you feel that magic again since going through my own dark night of the soul, so you can learn from my experience and the mentors and experts I meet along the way. And today we're talking to best-selling author and your teenage girl's empowerment person, Chelsea Gooden. Are you sick and tired of that negative self-talk? Are you ready to reframe your inner dialogue and self-judgment into compassion, loving kindness, and empowerment? Do you think your negative voice began when you were younger? Listen right now and learn tools to understand and empower not just you, but also any and all young girls you know. The amazing author of the new bestseller, Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Welcome to 52 Weeks of Hope, Chelsea.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. And your book, as soon as I started reading, I couldn't stop. I was instantly taken. And I actually love your dedication. Wait, I wrote this down. I dedicate this book to all the girls who profoundly expanded my mind and heart, helping to heal the teenage girl inside of me. And I love that. And I felt like I related. And you started with like, they just want to be listened to. And I feel like we all want to be listened to, but it starts.
Well, I've learned more from the girls than I ever taught them. That is for sure. And this book is very much me being their microphone, their portal for what they want to say to the world.
What do they want to say? I guess they're all unique. There's no one. But
well, I mean, the book, you know, is organized by the different chapters of kind of issues they struggle with, but all of us struggle with, because like you just said, these wounds that we deal with usually originate from our teenage years, and we carry them into adulthood. So these chapters are like perfection, self-doubt, people-pleasing, shame, you know, beauty, the things we're all still dealing with.
And I love how you address how don't stuff it down. You start it with like, just they want to scream and shout. And it's why they hit right in there, like a pressure point right there at your exactly that make you want to just go, ugh.
It's their ability, their affinity for radical honesty. I love teenage girls because they can just like cut through the truth so fast. And that's actually kind of a secret of connecting with them, is that if you're radically honest with them, then it really opens up real connection.
Right. But you have to do it in the right way, which I love your appendix because you have a list of the right ways and right phrases to use. Like, this book is great. So let's delve into it. I have so many different questions, like how'd you write the book and because plenty of people want to write a book and know things, but this is so chock full of information we can all use. So how do we not react when our buttons have been pushed by a teenage
the
girl?
The question of the century.
I had a teenage daughter who's now great.
So that charge that you feel when a teenage girl just pokes and like you, and there's a reactivity, right? So a lot of the book is about like looking within and going and healing and dealing with where that trigger started for you, so that you can truly come to your teenage daughter with an open heart, with curiosity, meeting her exactly where she's at, with no secret agenda, with no judgment, no shame. And it can be subtle. Like when we try to teach a girl something, often she receives it as criticism and judgment. And so it's really, how do we let go of that agenda, right? And that's something that is a person's own work to do. And so as much as everyone wants me to be like, this is how you fix the girl, the premise of my book is like, the girl is good. Like if you actually just love her exactly the way she is, you'll connect with her. It's really like find your own healing within this dialogue.
So when they're screaming and slamming the doors and I hate you and all of that, it's right. Just like, it's okay. That's just like, well, I've been there. I understand that.
Feelings, right? Yeah. And teenage girls love to be stereotyped for their big feelings, and they're stereotyped as emotional and crazy and dramatic and all these really negative words. And it's, to me, it's done a disservice. And if anything, it's created more reactivity, right? Like, it just, it's a cycle that feeds on itself. And what I, my, you know, I've worked with hundreds of girls now, you know, it's thousands of hours of just that one-on-one time with them as an academic tutor and a mentor. And that, what I've learned is just the act of holding space for their feelings. And I know we've all come in hearing the term holding space, and some might roll their eyes and so on. But the what has happened is that people love to come in quickly and advise and fix and slap positivity and tell the girl what the solution would be for their problem. And when I just listen, I'm like, yeah, that sucks. You know, like when, she, and it's big, like it's negative feelings too. Maybe she's really grumpy and mad about something. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds awful. I get why you're mad. Then what I see happen is she relaxes and is like, oh, thanks for just listening. Like, no one understood me. Like, she just feels understood by just the act of listening. And then I love to empower her agency and choice in this situation. I love to be like, well, what do you think the solution is here? Like, how would you like to handle it? And I do it in a real, truly judgment-free, agenda-free kind of tone. And that's when a girl has to like be like, wait, what? She trusts me with this choice and these thoughts? And like, she has to look within herself and be like, wait, what do I think about this? How should I handle it? And it's a beautiful empowerment space.
It is. And they are really creative and amazingly brilliant and able to come up with really great solutions.
Yeah, usually better than the one I, you know. That
absolutely. Because we have our own agendas of what we think is right.
But I was going to say, too, when they come up with their own solution, they're more likely to make it work, too, because it's their idea. And so they want it to work out. Whereas if you give them a solution and it doesn't work, then they just blame you anyway. And then they don't really learn the mistake. So say they do come up with a solution that doesn't work out. Also, that also is a good thing because they're learning from whatever mistake it was. And they own it because it was their choice in the first place. So then they better own the learning process too. Whereas if something you told them to do doesn't work out, then they're like, well, whatever, you told me to do it. And they're not even learning from it anyway.
It's like I always ask people, well, what fills you with joy? What really makes you happy and fills you with joy? Because you know your own answers.
Yeah, it's, I would think that I believe adults have big feelings too. We've just gotten really good at stuffing and repressing and containing, and they all come out some way or another in midlife crisis.
Like, why are we called a bitch? You know, it's like girls are called bitches. And then, you know, it's
there's all that societal structure that really judges women to show any type of emotion. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Uh-oh. She's got feelings now. Watch out. Like, no, like we're supposed to. I didn't grow up knowing how I felt. I talk about this a lot on here. We didn't. Everything was fine. So, I mean, it's Google feelings chart. I saw you had a feelings wheel in the appendix. One is a feelings wheel. I thought that was brilliant.
Because when working with the girls, I mean, you know, a lot of research to support just naming a feeling helps you feel it and actually let process through you.
Absolutely.
Just such a simple solution. And I have a pretty good vocabulary. And I still, honestly, when I was still just starting to experience my feelings for the first time, I was also like, Dad, angry.
Basics,
and the way the wheel works is the basics are in the center of the wheel, and then it spans out off of the different categories. And when you land, I remember the day I landed on disappointed. I was like, oh my gosh, wait, that's how I feel. And I didn't realize how powerful the emotion of disappointment is. It can be really gut-wrenching. And when I actually acknowledged that I felt disappointment, could sit with it, could sit in the discomfort of it, but process and then get it out of my system.
And it's healing.
Yes.
It's so healing. It's like, oh, name it and claim it. Yeah. It's an amazing thing. And it's like, wait, why did we learn this? Why do they teach this in school? Like, wait, teach us our feeling.
Emotional intelligence. Why are we teaching that?
Yeah. We need to know this. Okay. So the sitting, giving space for the kids and their feelings. And going, oh, that's incredible. And then letting them come up with their own solution. Like that's a huge, I don't have the index. Okay. So your book doesn't come out for 2 weeks, but by the time this airs, it will be out. So I don't have the index handy. I can't just put it on the screen. What chapter 2 is? Yes.
So the different chapters than me. So we have that feelings and then choice. Mm-hmm. And then we go into sexuality, perfection, people pleasing,
people pleasing. Oh my gosh, they started that young.
Oh my
little girl. Before, wait, I was gonna say that starts before teenage years.
Oh yeah, we teach little girls starting at the minute they can talk that they need to be likable and pleasing. And I mean, it's wild how much we ingrain that into them.
Oh my gosh.
And meanwhile, boys can be little disasters and everyone's just like, whatever, you know, it's no big deal.
Oh, that's sad. Oh, so how do they stop doing that? Yeah.
How does a parent start at a young age with the people pleasing?
No, like, how do they stop? How do we like what suggestions do you give in that chapter? Yeah.
So there's a lot of elements. I mean, the people pleasing, we know where it's like overly smiling and being like, yeah, yeah. That's something, but there's also a bigger issue, which is putting other people's needs before your own. And so when a girl responds to like, it's fine, you know, you hear it all the time and you hear women say it all the time. Yeah. Because this is something very much carried into womanhood. And what that means is like, I'm fine. Don't worry about my needs. Like, I have it handled. Let's just like, I want to make sure the world knows that I'm fine, because there's such pressure on girls to be perfect and likable. And if you're not fine, then that means maybe you're not those things. And it's much more deep into their core identity. And so what if we allow girls to really check in with their own needs? So like when a girl tells me it's fine, and then I'm like, no, it's not fine. Like, tell me what's going on. And then she'll usually recount some horrible story to me. And I'm like, whoa, that is not fine. That sounds awful. Do you want me to just like hold space to like hear how, like to say how awful that is right now, and you can vent about it, and actually letting her know that her needs are important? Because lots of times a girl's like, wait, really? Like, I can just be upset about this right now?
Yeah, and be authentic. Yes.
And then it's also teaching her what is and isn't fine. Because lots of times they're saying it's fine to some pretty horrible stuff because they just don't want to seem like they're a problem or causing an issue. And so, and then what is that mechanism of a woman or a girl checking in with herself? Like, if we're hosting a dinner party and we're making like 10 different dishes because we just want everyone there to be happy and cater to all their dietary needs. And it's like, do you want it? That sounds really stressful, actually. Like, what if you just made 3 dishes that bring you joy? Like you just said, what actually is going to bring you joy? And then if someone at your dinner party doesn't like it, they're not really your friend anyway, really.
Yeah.
And let them go. You know? Just like be true to like your own needs and check in with them.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I'm very big right now on like, take a breath. You don't have to constantly work that hard. You deserve to take that breath, get off the hamster wheel, get on the floor, play with your kids, like whatever it is. Laugh with your friends. It's so important. And I think people pleasing would definitely come into all of that. Okay, sexuality. I mean, we can't just gloss over that, because the shaming of girls or the conforming and everything else, repressing, there's just so many different things.
Right. So there, yeah, I mean, they are need space and room to explore this energy that's inside them, this identity that literally they can't do anything right. Right. They're either too sexy or not sexy enough. Like, I mean, women can't seem to do anything right in this space, and according to society. And what girls know and what they tell me over and over is just like, they get blamed for anything that they do. And apparently all the responsibilities on their shoulders, right? Like if we talk about dress codes, apparently what teaches a girl is that they are responsible for a boy's inclinations, that that's on their shoulders to manage for a boy, when of course it should be a boy's responsibility. And it's teaching girls that their body is a threat, that, and it, you know, it's interesting when we talk about clothes, that's a huge identity exploration for a girl, her relationship to her clothes. So any even ounce or judgment, it hits as shame, and it has lasting ramifications. So we do need to be incredibly mindful about how we talk with girls about how they start exploring and expressing their sexuality at this age. Granted, why everyone tries to control this so intensely is because they want to protect. It's out of an intention to protect, and which is understandable because it's not safe out there necessarily, right? And that's why I start the chapter actually addressing sexual violence in a big way. And I am personally on the board of a nonprofit called A Call to Men, which is all about getting men behind the cause of ending gender-based violence. Because the truth is, if women could have ended it by now, we would have done so, right? Yeah. We actually have to turn to the dominant group that's in power here, because it's, you know, we've named it violence against women, but it's actually male violence that's causing this. And why? Why is that? Those are the questions where I want to shift the conversation. You know, it's like, how could we raise our boys better? only 11 states currently require in their sex education curriculum to teach consent. Only 11 states teach consent. And that explains a lot. We're not teaching.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm going to do a plug right now. For my friend's book, Consent. So, okay, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Well, we've seen the boys are confused too. I say this compassionately. I'm not trying to like villainize men or boys in any way. Like I'm just trying to put the focus where we need to rather than girls just bearing the weight of shame and judgment in this space.
Yeah, definitely. It's just ridiculous.
It's hard to, I mean, I don't have compassion for parents navigating this.
Yeah.
But again, I'm like kind of positioning myself as the advocate for the girls, right? Like there's parenting experts out there too that, you know, can get into certain other nitty gritties, but like I'm trying to give the girls a voice right now and that's what they want to say.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So when you go into you call it expanding conversations with teenage girls or any human beings, and you've got all these, and like I said, it's appendix 2. Actually, I printed it out, which I don't like to do, print very many things out, to understand, like, what are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about that? How do I support you with that? I love all the questions. Are there certain questions that are like better than others, but how does that make you feel? It doesn't seem to be the best question to ask. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, my daughter will correct me. And I don't mean to leave my son out, but you know, this is about girls. So, but she'll be like, you did that so wrong. And I'll just be like, oh, how could I have said that better? Because she seems to know this so much better.
Well, we great problem, by the way. How could I have done better then? And like, I respect her choice and opinion in that. That's a great
Always my best teacher. She's like, well, you could have said it this way. I'll be like, oh, that's so good. She just was always like so good at these things since she was young. So are there certain questions?
Huge point of advice overall is to phrase everything as a question. Not only, again, with teenage girls, but just the people in your life, because you'll be surprised how often we're like, we kind of say it as a statement. And everyone always takes that as like, well, you don't really know what's going on. Like it creates defense because it's not always accurate to your story. And so when you phrase it as a question, like, wait, how are you interpreting that? How are you? I mean, I do it with my husband all the time. And when he says something, I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't see it like that. We were legitimately just seeing it different ways. And then, so with a girl, you're asking what is kind of one of the better questions. I mean, there's a lot in there that are good, but honestly, the most basic is like, what are your thoughts on that? What do you think about that? And I like this because a girl likes to feel smart. The more you can affirm her that she's smart and that she can trust her thoughts about things is really empowering.
That's so good. Okay, so I, of course, was looking at your socials and your Insta and everything. It looks like 3 years ago, you hadn't even written this book. Like, it might have been just an idea or something like that. Is that true?
No, it's a total, this miraculous last 2 years. Like, basically exactly 2 years from now, I got the idea.
That is amazing.
It literally wrote, got it with a major publisher, Simon & Schuster, and then it's just exploded, you know, with attention now, recommendations from Oprah Daily, Oprah's Book Club, Reese Witherspoon's company, Hello Sunshine. It's been wild, this ride.
Yeah, it really is. So how did you, so many people want to write a book. So let's turn to that because people are like, oh, I want to write it. Who am I to write it? All the imposter syndrome and all of that kind of stuff that comes up. How have you overcome those things? How did you sit down and you just wrote it?
Yeah. Well, I think we had some author friends in my life that gave me some good advice and guided me through the process a little bit. But the first point of advice was actually to start writing the book. And I was in a position where I could just write the proposal first and take it out with an agent. And people are tempted to do that because you don't want to necessarily write a whole book before, you'd rather get paid to do it and so on. But by actually writing the book, and I had a first draft before I got my agent, which ended up doubling and changing and stuff like that. But I needed to find out what was inside me, like what was actually the story that needed to be told. And I think if I had tried to pitch it into a proposal prior to doing that, it would have been different because I didn't actually know creatively, organically what was inside me, what story. And so by really honoring that creative flow and also my own authenticity, like it is such a creative authenticity journey writing a book, where the more you can just be vulnerable, tap into what makes you unique, what is your unique story. Don't try to fit in some book writing box or what's normal. That will not serve you. The more you can just understand what your uniqueness in the world is and write to that, the more it will pop.
Okay. Did you go into a writing group or something like that?
I did have a writing group just a few months. So, and that was helpful, just like keeping me on track. I mean, there's definitely like a discipline. Writing a book is a disciplined endeavor. I mean, you really have to set hours. That's something, if you want to write a book, like it takes really full commitment in your spirit to be disciplined enough to execute it.
What's the hardest challenge that you've gone through and how did you get through it?
Do you mean in the book writing process or life?
No. In your life. No. We're
yeah. There. I mean, we all have challenges. There's a couple really coming to my brain. I'm wondering what can best serve the world right now and sharing it. You know, I share it in the book, and I won't get into like tons of details here, but I actually had pain with sex for most of my life, like for decades. And that was actually a huge reason why I started exploring this topic in general. Cause like as a teenager, a girl and a woman in her 20s, it was like, oh yeah, it's painful. People just like expected and normalized that it might be painful. And that's again, kind of back to that societal squashing we do of a girl's sexuality, that we don't permission her to have any idea of pleasure. Like, whereas boys totally in the media, you know, are encouraged to pursue pleasure when that in that sphere. And So I really went on like a self-discovery journey of my own that was truly one of the biggest challenges.
Wait, didn't any of your friends tell you it's not supposed to be painful?
Sure. And I was like,
I'm curious. Like, did you keep it?
There was also enough of just like, yeah, like shrugging the shoulders. I mean, I'd go to doctors, oh my gosh, medical world would just be like, oh, you just need to have another glass of wine and relax. Like that was advice I got from doctors.
No.
Yes. It's wild. Actual gynecologists aren't trained in sexual pain, like different types of sexual pain. And so there's a huge amount of research that still needs to be done around this. Of course, like, you know, there's research about men's sexuality, Viagra, right? But there's not for women. And so it's just starting. I know a lot of the people who are part of this movement. And so but you know, to answer the question of the challenge, like on a personal level, it was something connected to my just identity and spirit too, right? Like know that part of yourself, to own that part of yourself is a real exploration and challenge.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's sad.
Look at them. We're on the other side of it now.
On the other side. So now you'll always be grateful.
There's a happy ending to this story. I got it. I figured out. Like,
I figured that. Yeah, and you probably have to write the chapter.
Exactly. I wouldn't have been able to write this chapter had I not gone through it. And now my story can help others.
Yep. It's the hardest. It's what we get to help others with. And I had an episode with Dr. Jennifer Berman. That's what she does. She helps people through that. Yeah. So I love that. And you have so many incredible women who have buoyed you and helped you on the journey and are like, you have to read this book. You have the First Lady of California. It looks like your parents. You had such a lovely upbringing. It looks like, I mean, nobody has a perfect upbringing, but they had you volunteering and you're part of so many incredible.
Yeah, so I have a big history of volunteering and activism. Actually, the girls that I've mentored, I just volunteered to mentor for many years, right? So I was an academic tutor, but then I was also volunteering my time because it didn't sit right with me that only girls pay me. Like, so I started volunteering my time. Uh-huh. So it's been always, service has always been a huge part of my life. And that's how I'm on the board of a nonprofit and the mentorship director of Democracy and so on. And so it was through that network, that women's empowerment space, feminism space, to like, you know, help and empower women in the world, that I met a lot of the big name people that have supported the book.
Yeah,
although with your you know, the Oprah thing and the Reese thing have come from.
No, that's organic. That's because your book is great.
Well, everything's technically organic with it.
That's actually true. And that's how your path unfolds, which is just so beautiful. And service is so important. The two biggest messages from compiling all the messages, I hope, in almost 200 episodes, the two biggest messages compiled is that we need to be in community. We are not meant to isolate and be alone. And the second is service. We are meant to be of service to others. So those, by the way, those are the meaning of life. Like that is, and in the blue zones where people live the longest, the healthiest, and the happiest, it's because of community and service. So you are right there.
Literally, the guy who gave a toast at my wedding said that about the blue zones because he knows I bring up that exact point you just made all the time. I bring up that point so often that a person made a toast about it at the wedding that I'm so about community.
That is. And that's why, like, of course, your book is, before it comes out, part of Oprah, part of Reese and everything else. And it was so, as soon as I started reading, I was like, this is so great. I ran into my daughter's visiting right now. And I'm like, you have to read this. And I'm already like buying copies for everybody. So this book is so amazing. Do you have a message I hope you want to give?
I'm going to just give something that just came into my brain, which is let yourself be weird and embrace that. Because that's actually, I feel like such a, you know, people often think of weird as a bad thing. And I have just seen it as this portal into your authenticity. So often, the more you can just like shed the shoulds of what you should look like, should do, should say, and just be like, wait, no, that's my weird thing I do. And that's who I am. Like, and own it, the more you'll step into your power and voice.
Yeah. And the universe will rise up to meet you for everything you want to do and be when you are that. And nobody's paying that much attention, by the way. That's the other thing. I've never thought of a diplomatic way to say that, but I just love that. This has been so great. Is there anything I didn't ask you that we're going to be done? And you're like, Lauren didn't ask me this.
No, I mean, the one thing I'm liking to put out to the universe is that this is a really good book for mom book clubs. And I say that because not only is it a really good book to read with your daughter, by the way, and have really awesome conversations about stuff, but moms talking to moms about the topics of these chapters. I've kind of learned in doing a lot of these podcasts and stuff that moms of teenage girls don't have the same amount of community because there's not the same amount of honesty. Everyone's a little bit like worried, like your daughter's doing that to my daughter, you know, and there's something about a book club with this book that I think is really going to create the community that you're talking about where women can be real and be like, oh man, yeah, my daughter was struggling with that. And that's, I don't know, I just feel, I see that vision and I want to put that there.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Anytime there can be any kind of community. And I love that idea too. So yeah, let's create a bunch of mom book clubs around Underestimated, the wisdom and power of teenage girls. It's fabulous. Thanks for being a guest today on 52 Weeks of Hope.
Thank you for being such an awesome interviewer in person and everything.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode and take with you Chelsea's messages of self-compassion, expansion, and inner healing. Such fulfilling messages to take into your week ahead. Be sure to share the episode with your friends so more people feel less alone in the overwhelm and to remember the pause. Answers emerge in the pause, and instead of adding to your to-do list, how about a to-do list? Be sure to tune in next week when we're talking about imposter syndrome and walking through your fears to get to the life you know you're meant for. It's a super empowering episode allowing you to feel more authentic. You do get to align with who you really want to be and do those things you really want to do. You're going to love next week's episode. Also, we're having a contest right now. We're giving away all kinds of fabulous gifts, journals, free coaching sessions, free astrology sessions, free manifestation sessions, free beginning podcaster sessions. There's free sessions with all kinds of past guests, plus a bunch of other amazing gifts. All you have to do is rate and review the podcast and share the review on social media. And for an extra entry, follow us on YouTube, take a picture and send that to me either at lauren@52weeksofhope.com or respond to the weekly email with a picture of your review, and you'll be entered. It's for the upcoming 200th episode celebration. That's all you have to do to win. Until next week, I'm Lauren Abrams. Thanks for listening.